So we'll see. It could be that Chris Hempstead was not the only thing that ends up getting a cut in half this evening. Well, if ever it was appropriate to cut to the chase, it's Parshas B'Shalach. And I'd like actually to begin really in the middle, that is to say in the event which really is the center of Parshas B'Shalach, and that's Kriyas Yamsuf. And moreover, I'd like to take a look at a pasuk which really describes the split itself. And as we will see, there is much to ponder in that pasuk. So we refer to Perek Yud Dalet, pasuk Kaf Aleph. This is where the sea actually splits. Vayet Moshe es yado al hayam. Moshe stretches out his hand over the sea. Vayelach Hashem es hayam. Hashem moves the sea. Baruch kadim azak al halayla, with a strong easterly wind the whole night. Vayasem es hayam lecharava, and turns the sea into dry land, or the seabed into dry land. Vayibaku amayim, and the water split. And that's it. That's Kriyas Yamsuf. And there are a number of basic questions, parshanut questions, pshat questions, that we should ask with regards to this pasuk. Firstly, if you look closely, the final two phrases, Vayasem es hayam lecharava, you turn the sea into dry land, Vayibaku amayim, and the water split. That is actually backwards. Because presumably, first the water splits, and then the seabed is exposed, and then it can be turned to dry land. You can't turn the sea into dry land, or the seabed into dry land, before splitting the sea. Why then does the pasuk refer to Vayasem es hayam lecharava before the actual splitting of the sea? That's a good shaila. We say ein mukdam u'me'ucher b'Torah, but these two events. Another interesting question is that the term that is used for dry land in this pasuk is charava, from the word charev, dry. Okay. However, if you look in the next pasuk afbeis, it says vayavo bnei Yisrael besoch hayam bayabasha. They enter into the sea bayabasha, on dry land. So in pasuk kaf aleph, the dry land or the dried seabed is referred to as charava, and in the very next pasuk it's called yabasha. Why? What is the difference between charava and yabasha? Interestingly, just to refer for a moment to the previous question, and to get a sense of just how much it bothered Rashi, certainly, when the pasuk says "Vayibaku hamayim," Rashi comments with three words: "Kol mayim sheba'olam," all water in the world got split. I'm not sure exactly how itemized that became, whether it was true for a bath or a cup of water, but every body of water split. That means Kriyas Yamsuf globalized. And the question is, well, why does Rashi say that? After all, the Pashtus is Vayibaku HaMayim, is the water of the Yamsuf. What did Rashi see that he extended it beyond the Yamsuf to all water? But the point is, that's Rashi's way of responding to our problem, as if to say, if the reference is to the water of the Yamsuf itself, it should have mentioned that before Vayasem es hayam lecharava. But rather, Rashi understands Vayasem es hayam lecharava means that presupposes that the water of the Yamsuf is already split. What then do you add with the words Vayibaku amayim? It must be beyond the Yamsuf. And that is Rashi's response, and that's it. Just to see how affected Rashi was by this lack of order. But we come back to our questions of charava versus yabasha. Another question. Back to pasuk kaf aleph. The pasuk states, Vayosem eseyom lecharova. Now the word vayosem, which derives from the word lasim, which means to place. And that being the case, the word lasim doesn't seem to be the intuitive word for turning something into something else. When you turn something to something else, you're not placing it somewhere. Placing sounds like you're moving something. Nothing. We're not talking about something being moved. We're talking about it being a change occurring within it. Perhaps a more likely expression should have been vayafoch eshayam lecharava, as indeed we say in Tehillim, hafach yam leyabasha, to change it, to switch it, not to place it. These are very bothersome questions. Or perhaps even more briefly, vayecharev hayam, the yam dried up. You can economize. You don't even need to say vayasem eseyam lecharava. Say vayecharev. In Lashon HaKodesh, any noun it can be a verb very easily. In order to answer the above questions, and they certainly deserve a response, one of the great parshanim of the 1700s, Rabbi Naftali Weizel, who was himself a rather complicated person and somewhat controversial, the Ksava Kabbalah quotes him, and for our purposes, that's good enough for us. And Rav Tali Weizel actually discusses this in his Peirush on Pirkei Avos, which is called Yein Levanon. The Yein Levanon was told to me by my father, Zichron Levracha, 30 years ago. He said it is one of the greatest Peirushim on Pirkei Avos. It was not then in print. He said, if it ever comes back into print, get it. And it did a number of years ago. I picked it up. Nice, goes into 500 pages. And within the context of his Peirush, as Reb Naftali Weizel discusses this question. And in typical Jewish fashion, he answers all of the above by posing another question. And that is, and this is more of a nuanced question, but if you have a look again in Pasuk Kaf Beis, it says, Vayavo'u b'nei Yisrael besoch hayam b'yabasha. B'nei Yisrael entered the sea, or came into the sea, Vayavo'u. Now, what's interesting is, there is a term which is used throughout Tanakh for people that go out to sea, and that is laredet layam, yorde hayam, like we say in Tehillim, yorde hayam ba'aniyot. Why then, if they are literally going into the sea, going down into the sea, would the pasuk not say vayer du'a tochayam? It's said even when you're on the water in the sea, you're called yorde hayam. But here it says vayavo'u b'nei Yisrael besochayam. And Reb Naftali Weizel explains like this. That's quite a chiddush, but as we say, a chiddush is warranted here. Something. Someone has to say something. Naftali explains. As we know, many of the miracles, and there was not just one miracle that happened in Kriyas Yamsuf, there were a number. And many of them were literally for the convenience of Am Yisrael, which is an amazing thing. If you read the Midrashim and you see there were springs of water, not even seawater, tap water, or actually not even tap water, mineral water. And there was the vista was wonderful, and the whole thing, all of that was laid on for Bnei Yisrael to make their passage through the Yam Suf as pleasant as possible. And this is actually also part of the geula of Am Yisrael, that they should just be easy for them, as someone's really gone through the trouble to make it pleasant for them. Now, as we know, says Naftali, the seabed is much deeper than dry land. That's what allows the sea to exist. And in fact, that is why people that go out to sea are called Yardei Hayam. After all, one sincerely hopes that they will not be Yardei Hayam. We do not wish for them to descend into the sea. Why then is anyone who sets sails called Yardei Hayam? Because he sets out over something which is much lower, the seabed itself. Because it is lower, anyone who goes out to the sea is called Yardei Hayam. But that makes all the difference now when in our pasuk it says, Vayavo'u b'nei Yisrael. They did not descend. They entered, but they didn't descend. for one of the ways in which Hashem made it possible or easy, shall we say, convenient and pleasant for Bnei Yisrael, is that they didn't even need to go down into the sea, the seabed that was available. For that's not so a simple matter at all. It's something, it can be quite mountainous if you remove the water. Rather, the seabed was elevated so that it became level with dry land. And thus we say, Vayavo'u b'nei Yisrael el Socheim. They didn't go down. They just moved forward. When you think about it, if you take a portion of the seabed, which is lower, and you raise it, you are thereby displacing a good amount of water. If it is the breadth of Am Yisrael, and you raise that seabed, you are raising up all that water. Where does that water go? Well, naturally, although none of this is natural, naturally, as the water level rises, it just spreads out and evens out over the balance of Yam Suf. However, here, what happened is that the sea water that rose when the seabed rose, that whole section of the sea, as it then went to the side, it stayed on either side of them. That's why we say that the Kriyas Yam Suf, it was like walls, and they stood upright like walls. That's what happened to that displaced water. Now, interesting, we've already referred to it, shall we say, indirectly, but important to make a note of it. The word Yam, in pure terms, in Lashon HaKodesh, we translate the word Yam as sea, but that's not correct. The word Yam is actually the seabed. Water that is on the seabed is called Yam, but that's a borrowed term. It's a cliché-y term. It's because it's on the seabed, that water is called Yam. But in strictest sense, the Yam is the seabed. As indeed we say, the well-known pasuk in the Navi, in talking about the future, Kimala ha'aretz de'as Hashem, the world will be filled with knowledge of Hashem, kamayim layam mechasim, as water covers the Yam. Now, what water covers the Yam? Any water that covers the Yam is the Yam. Why do we refer to Mayim Layam Mechasim? Because the water, the Yam, is actually the seabed. The sea is water that covers the Yam, in the strictest sense. Therefore, says Rabbi Naftali, when the Pasuk describes the Kriyas Yam Suf, it begins by saying, Vayosem es hayam lecharava. Now, we normally, or we prior, hitherto, for translated Vayasem es hayam lecharava as switching the seabed into dry land. But says Rabbi Naftali, that's not what it's referring to, for a number of reasons. Firstly, the verb to switch is not Vayasem. It's number one. Vayasem means to place, it doesn't mean to switch. Secondly, when the sea becomes dry, we see in the next pasuk that's called Yabasha. What is Yabasha and what's Harava? Yabasha, says Reb Naftali, is what happened to the seabed. Hafach Yam le Yabasha. Yabasha betoch hayam. Within the sea there was Yabasha. Harava is the natural dry land. That's the seashore. That's a separate piece of land. That's Harava. Therefore, the first phrase, which says Vayasem es hayam lecharava, refers to Hashem placing the Yam, placing the seabed flush with and equal with Charava, the seashore. It refers to the elevation. Now, once that seabed is raised, it's elevated to become level with the seashore, Vayasem es hayam lecharava, what happens to all the water that rises with it? The answer is then Vayibaku hamayim. Then the water split, but it stayed as walls on either side. With that, he has addressed all of the questions that we raised. So that's a very wonderful understanding of Kriyas Yam Suf in terms of that Pasuk Kaf Aleph, which describes Kriyas Yam Suf from Rav Tali Weizel. Interestingly, if one may add, perhaps as a PS, perhaps one may say that can be seen in the Pshat, in the Pasuk in Tehillim, which describes Kriyas Yam Suf. Interestingly and parenthetically, it's not clear exactly where the term Kriyas Yam Suf originated from. I'm not sure, I'm not aware, which doesn't mean much, but I'm not aware of anywhere in Tanakh where the verb Kriya is used with regards to Chazal referred to it the whole time, Kriyas Yam Suf. But the Tanakh uses all sorts of other words. Bok Hayam, etc. Interesting. But in any case, one of the terms that's used, which we say... which we say in Tehillim, in Sukkot Zimra and Shabbos, the Kila Olam Chastos. So we say, Legozer Yamsuf Legzarim, Kila Olam Chastos. Now that's very interesting because Gezarim are strips. Now if you take the way we normally look at Kriyas Yamsuf, take a sea and split it in half, what you have are not two strips. What you have are two halves of the sea. But that's not called Gzarim. But the Pasuk says, L'gozei Yamsuf L'gzarim. Now we should know, this is the source in the Pasuk for the tradition that we have from Chazal, that actually there were 12 distinct roots in Kriyas Yamsuf, one for each Shevet. Where does that come from? It comes from L'gzarim, because that means that the water was actually in strips between each of the Shvatim. That's Gzarim. But al derech hapshat, and based on what Rabbi Naftali Weisel said, I think we can also understand that in fact, it was divided into strips because it was actually only a larger strip of the sea that was elevated and then split in two. What those two parts of that elevated strip are themselves Gezarim, and that therefore lefi pshuto I think is an understanding of legozei yamsuf legezarim. Okay. So this is Rabbi Naftali Weisel on Kriyas Yamsuf. Certainly a lot to think about in the psukim that we say regularly, Shir Sayam, v'chule. Now, one of the central elements of Shir Sayam, if we move now into the Shira, which is Perek Tesvav, and we see Pasuk Beis, we have the famous, as the pasuk begins, Aziva Zimraska, actually difficult words to translate, Vayihili Lishua, Ze Keli Va'an Behu. This is my God, I will glorify him. That's Ze Keli Va'an Behu. And what does that mean? Well, it has many meanings in terms of pshat. But there's a famous drasha of Chazal on these words, Ze Keli Va'an Behu, and it translates into operative, shall we say, halacha. And that is the Gemara says in a number of places, Shabbos Kuf Lamed Gibel and Sukkot Daf Yud Aleph, Hisno Elefon of B'mitzvahs. Beautify the mitzvahs before him. Hisno Elefon of B'mitzvahs. This pasuk is the source in the Torah for the concept of Hidur Mitzvah. That's where it comes from. Ze keli va'anbehu. It's not a fun of a mitzvah. And therefore we look for the most beautiful, whatever it may be, menorah or mezuzah or whatever it might be. What is hidur mitzvah? Just if we ponder for a moment or discuss for a moment the meaning of hidur mitzvah. As far as we're concerned, hidur mitzvah represents, shall we say, the icing on the cake, which it does. The added measure, the extra mile, it's not an absolute requirement. The mitzvah, more correctly, is not invalidated without it, but it's just better with it. That's a hidur mitzvah. And indeed, we find, for example, the mitzvah of having the arba'im minim together, or at least three of the four, in the kosher klach, or however you do it, putting them together, that's a hidur mitzvah. But we do know, and we should know, that if for some reason a person did not have them together, it takes two in one hand, two in the other, or even one after the other, no one ever does this, but if they did, they fulfill the mitzvah. Arba minim. What about igud? What about having them together? Hidur mitzvah. But it doesn't invalidate the mitzvah if you don't have it. However, in light of this, in light of our assertion, which is largely correct, that a lack of hidur mitzvah doesn't invalidate the mitzvah, but let's come now to the famous opening words of the third perek of Maseches Sukkah, Lulav HaGozel. Lulav HaGozel, a stolen lulav, we're not going to speak about the stolen part, the Hayovish, and a dry lulav, is posel. Posel, a dry lulav. How dry is dry? That's another question. But dry enough. It's posel. Why is it posel? Because if it's dry, it's lacking in hidur mitzvah. Except the question is, did we not say that a lack of hidur mitzvah doesn't disqualify? Perhaps you don't have the added hidur, but it doesn't disqualify the mitzvah. Why do we say that it's posel? Some say that with Arba Minim, there's more of a requirement of Hidur because the Esrog is called Pre-Eitz Hadar. And all the Arba Minim are equated in that way. If you have Hidur written into the mitzvah, the lack of Hidur will invalidate the mitzvah. That's one approach. But Rashi quotes the words, Zeh Keli Va'anveyu. You need to do Hidur mitzvah. You don't have Hidur mitzvah. The whole thing's fafalan. The whole thing is possible. But why is it possible? How does that work together with our understanding that it's an added measure? It makes things better, but the lack thereof doesn't make them worse. Well, the Sfasemis explains in his Peirush to Masechet Sukkah that there's actually two types of lack of Hidur Mitzvah. Once Hidur Mitzvah comes into the equation, there's really two ways that Hidur Mitzvah can be lacking. As if to say, Hidur Mitzvah can be lacking in that this could look better, but it doesn't. But okay, so it doesn't look better. If you have the Arba Minim, if you take them all together, it's nice. And if you don't take them together, also nice. Not as nice, but okay. As if to say, shall we say, a lack of active Hidur, a lack of added Hidur, that doesn't invalidate the mitzvah, like with Igud. Lulav HaYovesh is a different story. If it's that dry, we could probably refer to it not just as lacking the icing on the cake. There's something wrong with the cake. In other words, it is chronically lacking in Hidur. It is anti-Hidur. That dry, it is the opposite of Hidur. And that could already disqualify the mitzvah. If you don't have the extra nice element, that's one thing. But if it looks grotesque or absolutely not nice, That could be a problem with the mitzvah itself. It's very interesting that the Meiri, when he discusses this lulav hayovish, this shlamazel of a lulav, so he says in his words, nital hadoro legamre. I mean, anything nice about it has absolutely been removed from it. So what are you left with? And in fact, he quotes in this respect the explanation of the Yerushalmi, the classic comment of the Yerushalmi. It says, Yerushalmi, you know why a dry lulav is posel, because the pasuk says in Tehillim, in Halel, Lo hameisim yehalelu ka. Right? The dead, they don't praise Hashem. Meaning it's a dead lulav. So now the question is that a machlokas between the Bavli and Yerushalmi? Which can be. The Bavli puts it down to Hidur mitzvah, the Yerushalmi says it's a dead lulav. But the Meiri says it's all the same thing. In other words, if it's a dead lulav, then this is a chronic Hidur, lack of Hidur. And that can actually disqualify the mitzvah. So that is a very interesting and important discussion with regards to Hidur mitzvah. What happens when it's missing, and to what degree that it is missing can actually affect the mitzvah itself, or just that you don't have that added element of Hidur mitzvah. I'll mention, and I was alerted to this, you can say the words of the Gemara many times, Hisnar lefanu b'mitzvahs, Hisnar lefanu b'mitzvahs, Hidur mitzvah. But the Mechilta, which also discusses in our Parsha, and comes to the same conclusion, with one difference to the Gemara. The Gemara says, Zekeli v'anveihu, Hisnar lefanu b'mitzvahs, beautify mitzvahs before him. The Mechilta says, Zekeli v'anveihu, Es no elefon of b'mitzvahs. I will beautify the mitzvahs before him. The Mechilta's rendition of the drasha changes from a mitzvah, his no elefon of, to a declaration, es no elefon of, I will. And the question is, again, is this a machlokas? Why would you say which? Well, the truth is that the Mechilta is closer to the pasuk, because the pasuk is actually quotes the Jewish people talking. It doesn't quote Hashem talking to them. Hashem doesn't say Tanvehi or whatever. It's a Bnei Yisrael saying Zekeli va'anveihu. If you would translate that into Hidur mitzvah, what they are saying is Es no elefon of b'mitzvahs. I will beautify mitzvahs before Hashem. So it's truer in a sense, the first person to the context of ve'anveihu. The Gemara turns it into a mitzvah, so to speak, his no elefon of, because it then becomes a mitzvah. If Am Yisrael said it, then that's what you should do. And if that's what you should do, then the Gemara phrases it as what you should do, his no elefon of. But it's interesting that in its source, it comes from Bnei Yisrael. And perhaps there's room to say that it's appropriate. It's appropriate that something called hidur mitzvah should come from something phrased in the first person. Because hidur mitzvah is how to make the mitzvahs beautiful. And from a certain point of view, that's only really meaningful if the person realizes themselves that that's how they should do mitzvahs. As if to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in mitzvahs is that of commanding them. But there's a certain aspect of the mitzvah that if you need to command it, but the person doesn't really appreciate it, so then it kind of doesn't really have meaning. As if to say, Hashem says, these are the mitzvahs, and this is what you need to do. To then say, and you need to do them with hidur, that's the Jewish people's job, is to realize that that's how a mitzvah should be done. And therefore, it's very appropriate that the hidur mitzvah really came from the Jewish people in that way. Because that's also part of the hidur, to realize that you shouldn't need to be told. And if you do need to be told, it's kind of not worth it anymore. And that's why Am Yisrael themselves were elevated to this. And I think perhaps there's room to say something else. And that is that we always, hidur mitzvah always comes from these three words, ze keli v'anvehu. But really, of the three words, only one of them is about hidur mitzvah, namely, v'anvehu, esnar lefana b'mitzvahs. But we always put it together, ze keli v'anvehu. I think there's room to say that hidur mitzvah, it comes from v'anvehu, but it's a product of Zekeli. As if to say, even for the Jewish people, there's different ways to relate to mitzvahs. If we relate to Hashem as distant, and he's just there as the commander, and there's obligations, so obligations a person fulfills. And not always with hidur, and perhaps a person may not even appreciate the value of doing something for hidur, because you've got to be Yotze, and that's that. But that's a distant relationship. Zekeli is a very close relationship. There were certain giluyim and certain revelations. Kriyas Yamsuf is historically known as a time when everyone had these revelations. This is before Matan Torah. Perhaps in some ways it was a closer encounter than Matan Torah experientially. This is where we say on the word Zekeli, Rasa Shivcha Alayam, even the Shivcha saw, what even Yechezkel Bebuzi didn't see, whatever that means, but it means that all of Am Yisrael had this very close sense of encounter with Hashem, encapsulated with the words Zekeli. Once you have that relationship called Zekeli, Hidur mitzvah is just waiting to happen. Hidur mitzvah is a natural outcome of that, because the relationship changes, and all mitzvahs then at that stage, you naturally want to do them in the best way possible, because you've encountered the one who's commanding them. It's a different relationship altogether. And therefore, I think it's fitting that we say these three words together, Zekeli va'anveyu, because Zekeli, that sense of relationship, leads to va'anveyu. That's where it comes from. There is one final point. There's much to talk about hidur mitzvah, obviously, but again, to look at the words, we're familiar with them, we hear them often. Hisna'i lefanav b'mitzvahs. And we translate that as beautify the mitzvahs before Hashem. Hisna'i lefanav b'mitzvahs. Actually, if we translate those words literally, hisna'i lefanav b'mitzvahs does not literally translate as beautify the mitzvahs before Hashem. But rather, it translates as hisna'e, noi is beauty, hisna'e is reflexive, which means beautify yourself, lefanov, b'mitzvahs, before him, with mitzvahs. Except, since when is it a mitzvah to beautify yourself before Hashem in mitzvahs, and what does that mean? If you tell people to beautify themselves, you may never see them again. They'll be osik b'mitzvah and potter from all other mitzvahs. Except the point is, and I believe is a very deep idea here. And Rabbi Yonah speaks about this in his Perushim Pirkei Avos, that from a certain point of view, if a person beautifies themselves with a mitzvah, it's the greatest hidur mitzvah. Because really what it means is that everyone has something that they're proud to be associated with. Everyone has something that they would brag about, that makes them look good. That's the picture they put in their mantelpiece, their great moment. And as long as it, whatever it is that makes them look good is greater than them, it can actually be a very positive thing. As much as we say that for a person to make themselves look good, that seems to be vanity, that's only if they hold themselves as the highest good. But if they hold themselves as associated with a greater good, that's not vanity anymore. That's a very valuable thing. That's a very positive thing. We say that pride is a negative trait. But if you're proud to be Jewish, no one ever accuses you of having bad midos. The person says Jewish and proud, and so it says, you know, gaiva is not a good thing. It is good because being Jewish is greater than you are, and being proud to be associated with that is a very great thing. And therefore, hisna'il afan of a mitzvah is not just, and I think this is, one could almost say, the pnimius of hidu mitzvah. It's not just have a nice esrog, which you should, within reason, but you should. Have a nice menorah and all of those things. But hisna'il afan of a mitzvah, the greatest glory you can give to a mitzvah is that you beautify yourself by associating with the mitzvah, as if to say, this is what I take most pride in, this is what I talk about, and this is so important to me. That's the picture of my mantelpiece, me with the great mitzvah. That's hisna'il afan of a mitzvah. From a certain point of view, as we know, whatever a person invests in and takes pride in tells you a lot about the person themselves. To be mahadur mitzvah says you hold mitzvahs to be most valuable. That's the greatest hidur mitzvah. So these are some thoughts to accompany us as each one in our own way engages in the wonderful pursuit of zekei levandeu, hisna'i lefonav b'mitzvahs. Now, I'd like to move on actually not too much further in the parsha, because the matter is actually connected. In Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Kaf Beis. So very soon after Kriyas Yamsuf, we come to a place called Mara. Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Kaf Beis. And to read the Pesukim a little bit, Vayasa Moshe Yisrael Miyamsuf. Moshe travels Bnei Yisrael. As we know, a lot was being washed up on the Yamsuf. They were quite keen to stay there, but Moshe travels them on. Vayetu amid bashur, vayelchu shlosh yesyomim bamidbar, velo matzu mayim. They went 3 days in the midbar, and they didn't find water. And then they come to Mara, and they can't drink, but then Hashem shows Moshe that wood, or that tree, and it sweetens the water, and they're able to drink it. Now, there's a very well-known drasha that relates to these words that Vayelchu shlosh yesyomim in Pasuk Kaf Beis. Vayelchu shlosh yesyomim bamidbar v'lo matzu mayim. They went for 3 days. They didn't find water. And in Pasuk Kaf Dalet, Vayilonu ha'am. They're complaining. Now, although on a pshat level they're complaining because they don't have water, but there's more to it than that. The Gemara in Bava Kamma Daf Pei Beis explains, as is quite well known, that this episode is the source of something that we have until our times, which is the mitzvah of reading from the Torah every 3 days. Or more correctly, 3 days should not go by without reading from the Torah. That's Sheni V'Chamishi, Shabbat Sheni V'Chamishi. It comes from here. How so? Because, says the Gemara, they went for 3 days v'lo matzu mayim. Amazingly, in addition to the pashtus of water, ein mayim ela Torah, they didn't have Torah. And look at them. They fall to pieces. Vayilonu, they're complaining. That's what happens if you don't learn Torah. You deteriorate, and therefore, ondu neviim shebedorom. The neviim came. It sounds like it wasn't even necessarily Moshe Rabbeinu, but the neviim at the time. I'm not sure how many others there were. Maybe Moshe was with them, and they instituted Torah learning or Torah reading every 3 days. What form of Torah did they have at this time? This is before Matan Torah. Whatever. Now, there's a very interesting comment, because I believe what we've said so far is relatively well known. 3 days, no water, you see what can happen, and what's fascinating is that very often when you hear about that Gemara, you don't have a chumash open in front of you, and you could lose out. Because if someone would ask, if you just see the Gemara says, you know, 3 days in the desert, complaining, it's like there's 3 days without Torah. And then someone asks, where were they? When was this? You might not know. You might think, I don't know, in a nondescript time, it was in the middle of Shvat or Teves or somewhere like that. 3 days. But if you open up a Chumash and you look at the Pesukim in context, you will see that these 3 days, as we read from the Pasuk, Pasuk Kaf Beis, are the 3 days that followed Kriyas Yamsuf. And that, says Rabbi Avraham Gurewitz, Shalita of Gateshead, that has to change everything about what the Gemara is saying. Because without this context, we'd say, you know, 3 days, okay, one shouldn't go 3 days. If you do, you never know what can happen. But now you realize these were the 3 days that followed Kriyas Yamsuf. That is to say, these were the 3 days that followed the, as we described, and without belittling it and without taking anything away, the greatest revelation and one of the greatest experiences ever in the history of the world, including Zekeli v'Anvehu. And then read this pasuk again. As if to say, if we would ask, how long do we imagine, how long would we have thought that the experience, the elevating experience of Kriyas Yamsuf would stay with the Jewish people, keep them on level, keep them on par? I think we would have measured idealistically in months, and perhaps more conservatively in weeks, but that sort of thing doesn't wear off so easily. And the whole thing crashes when the Gemara says within 3 days they were complaining. That means Kriyas Yamsuf could be forgotten within 3 days, with all that was experienced. But there's a second part of the equation, because that's a rather upsetting thought. But what's the moral of the story? The moral of the story is, what's the antidote? There is a solution. What is a solution? The answer is learning Torah. And then you're okay again. But why are you okay again? And it seems that the answer is that if a person doesn't have regular Torah input in their life, and they're not speaking the language of Torah, they lose contact with any experience that belongs to that language. As if to say, if a person wants to return to their mundane life, so they lose traction, right? They lose the connection with whatever it was at the end, and never the twain shall meet. And the experience, it dissipates or fades. In order for an experience like Kriyas Yamsuf to stay, a person needs to stay, in our terminology, logged on to the channel where it came from. And that comes through learning Torah. Because learning Torah, it keeps a person on and connected in terms of the one who gave him the Torah and the one who gave him all those experiences. And thus it is two very important lessons that they come out one next to the other. Number one, how easy it is for something to fade, but how powerful learning Torah is in order to maintain it. It's very interesting to note, as Rav Gurewitz points out, we read from this part of Parshas B'Shalach twice in the year. This week, of course, Parshas B'Shalach, but also on the seventh day of Pesach, not surprisingly. It's the day of Kriyas Yamsuf, and therefore it's in Yonah Diyoma. We read Kriyas Yamsuf. Where do we start? B'Shalach. I mean, that's when the story happens. And where does the laning on Pesach end? Interestingly, it ends with this episode in Mara. That's the conclusion of the Pesach laning. And that's very interesting, because by the Torah's own description, Mara happened at least 3 days afterwards. So if you want, you can get together 3 days after Pesach, when the post-Pesach cleaning has finally come to a halt, and read about Mara. I mean, that's when it happened. But why do we read about it on the seventh day of Pesach? And moreover, answer perhaps balabatishly that, you know, sometimes you need to make up psukim, as if to say you need to make up the number of psukim, you have enough. You have, from the beginning of B'Shalach until the end of Oz Yashir, you have enough. You have enough for seven aliyahs, even if it's Shabbos. You have enough even for Achron. And still we keep going. And seemingly, says Rabbi Avraham, the reason why we keep going is because if we don't read what happened 3 days later, so that we are in danger of just repeating that again. As if to say, B'nai Yisrael experienced Kriyas Yamsuf, and then they were in danger of losing it without Torah 3 days later. as much as it's a rather sobering conclusion to the laning, it's a little bit upsetting. It's not the high of Oz Yashir. But we cannot afford to end laning with Oz Yashir. Because if we do, we keep it an abstract. And if it's an abstract, it's detached, and then it could be forgotten. And therefore, the Metaknia Kriyas HaTorah says if we want Oz Yashir to stay with us, we've got to do what they did to make sure it stays with them. Remember the lesson of Mara and maintain it through regular Torah, Ein Mayim Ela Torah. And that, if that's a lesson that is learned, that is a much more valuable experience because it is an enduring experience, more than Kriyas Yamsuf in abstract by itself. So these are the very thought-provoking comments of Rav Avram with regards to tomorrow after Kriyas Yamsuf. Let's just conclude. We'll have to find a middle ground, if you pardon the expression, for this week, with regards to our timing here. Perek Tet Zayin introduces the man to us. Perek Tet Zayin. And as we know, there are certain mitzvahs that accompanied man. They were what are called mitzvahs l'sha'a, not l'doros, because the man only existed for that generation. But among the mitzvahs is that you cannot leave any over the next day. Further among the mitzvahs that on Shabbos do not go out. And they are expressed in Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Yud Tes and Pasuk Kaf Tes. In Pasuk Yud Tes of Perek Tet Zayin, Am Yisrael have already collected the man, and they get a directive from Moshe. Vayomer Moshe alehem, ish al yoseh mimenu ad boker. Let no man leave it over until the next day. And of course, some people did, and they were me, which is Pasuk Kaf. Lo shamu Moshe, vayerum talim vayuvash. Okay. So that's Pasuk Yud Tes. That's the first mitzvah. Don't leave any over, which is not a simple thing. You're in the middle of nowhere, and this is your food. To be sure not to leave any over, it's an act of faith. Okay, so be it. The Jewish people are being schooled in faith. Next mitzvah to come is Pasuk Kaftes. Moshe says, Ru'u ki Hashem nasan lechem ha-Shabbos. Al-keinu nosin lechem b'yom ha-shishi lechem yomayim. He's given you lechem mishnah on Friday. Shavu ishtachtav, and therefore on Shabbos itself, stay where you are. Al-yetzish mimakomo b'yom ha-shvi'i. No one should leave b'yom ha-shvi'i. So these are two mitzvahs that accompany man. What's very interesting is they are both prefaced with the word al. In Pasuk Yotes, al yoser mimeno ad boker, don't leave, let a person not leave. Pasuk Kaftes, al yetzei ish mimakomo b'yom ha-shvi'i. And the question that the Meshech Chochma raises is that, as we know, there's two words for saying that something shouldn't happen. And when it comes to mitzvahs, the more common term is lo. Just look at the Aseres Adibros. Lo titzach, lo tinaf, lo tiknov, lo tachmod. There's no al there. The standard way to set for a mitzvah to come in is with the word lo. Having said that, these two come in with the word al. What is behind the shift between lo and al? And as Meshech Chochma explicates and presents for us, the difference between the word lo and al is that lo is more of a command. Do not do that. Al can have an element of a request almost. Let this not happen. We find, interestingly, the two, this distinction comes out in the Haftarah, which we sometimes read, depending on about Shlomo HaMelech, the famous case with the two women, each one said that the child was theirs. And he says that in cut them in half. And then the real mother came forward and says, give it to the other woman. V'hameis al temisuhu. But don't kill him. And Shlomo says, she's the mother, give it to her. V'hameis lo temisuhu. Don't kill him. When she said it, she said al temisuhu. When he said it, he said lo temisuhu. In almost every other respect, it's the same. But the point is, she's begging. He's instructing. That's the difference between al and lo. Interestingly, in the Nuschos, between Nusach Ashkenaz, or more correctly, between Ashkenazim and Sfardim, what we call Edut Mizrach, in Mayriv, you also see that just before Kriyat Shema we say Va'avasecha lo sasur mimenu lo lamin. But the Sfardim say Va'avasecha, so we say Va'avasecha al tasur mimenu, and they say Va'avasecha lo tasur mimenu. And actually changes the meaning a little bit. For us, it's a request. And also it changes the meaning of the word Va'avasecha, because if it's a request, you're saying Avasecha, your love for us, al tasir, do not remove from us. They're saying Va'avasecha, your love, meaning our love for you, Sfardim. Lo tasur mimenu. It won't, it's a declaration. Interesting. That's al and lo. And what does it have to do with us? Because sometimes, says Meshech Chachma, it's forbidden to do something. But it is so overtly for your own good. Sometimes you'll plead with a person, even if what they're doing is wrong, you'll plead with them if it's so manifestly harmful for them. You're almost saying for your own good, you're begging them not to just harm themselves. Now, whereas all averus are harmful, but these infractions with the man, they led to immediate negative results. As if to say, as we know, Moshe says, don't leave any over. It's not just an instruction. It's not just a command. You're forbidden. He's pleading with Am Yisrael, don't do it. Al Yoser. Because if you do, you'll lose the man. Which is exactly what happened. Anything they left over was lost. It became wormy. It became inedible. And Moshe is pleading with them in that way, not to harm themselves. Similarly, don't go out. Do yourself a favor. It's Shabbos. You have enough. There's nothing there. So don't. It's not just forbidding. It's not just if you go to there'll be man, but it's off limits. There's nothing there. Al yetzeish mimkom be'yom hashvi'i. Meshech Chachma is further mechadish. I don't know if it's his chiddush, but he maintains that whoever went out, everyone got lechem mishneh on Friday. Whoever went out on Shabbos, so then his Shabbos food, his Shabbos man deteriorated also, because it's only there because you got double on Friday. If you're going out on Shabbos, so then there's nothing left for you. So Moshe says, do yourselves a favor, al yosem imenu. That's what's behind the al here. So it occurred to me, he doesn't quote it, but clearly it's mitbakesh from his words. This is true, ultimately, of Torah in general. We find the famous pasuk, we say just before putting the Sefer Torah back, Hashem says, Ki lekach tov nasati lechem, tarasi al tazovu. In other words, Hashem is not just, quote-unquote, you know, forbidding us from abandoning the Torah. It doesn't say lo tazovu. He says al tazovu. Why? Because the beginning of the pasuk says, because it's good for you. So why damage yourselves by leaving? Al tazovu, it's almost like a request on Hashem's part, which covers the entire Torah. Because the lekach tov, and therefore when you plead with someone for their own good, you use the al. And that ultimately is a reference to the Torah as a whole. Okay, we'll leave it over here for this evening. Mitzvah Hashem, traffic should be a bit clearer next week.